Speaking Millennial is sponsored by Flemington Car and Truck Country on Route 202 and 31. See them for their annual tent event this weekend on Saturday and Monday, October 7th and 9th. It's the best time of the year to buy. Find out more at Flemington.com.
Hey guys, welcome back to Speaking Millennial. I am Bill Spadia. You can follow me on Twitter at Bill Spadia, here with Jessica Nutt at Chasing Jess Nutt. And the great, the iconic someday, Jay Black.
That's right.
Someday be iconic.
I hope so. I hope I'm worshipped in the same way that many of the other icons of our age are worshipped. Jerry Lewis, Batman.
Batman. Want to be Batman.
By the way, two icons that I thought of first was Jerry Lewis and Batman.
That's weird. I think that's weird. That's not very millennial.
I feel like
who?
Christian Bale, Batman. He's millennial.
Jerry Lewis? Who's that guy? All right, we have a guest. I am happy to introduce Elora Nanos. Elora, how you doing?
Hi there. How you doing?
So it took me the longest time to figure out your titles.
I have a lot of titles.
So a lot of titles. So here's why she's our guest. So Jay's looking at me curiously like,
I'm excited about the titles.
Elora is, she's a lawyer.
Okay.
She's also, what are you, a writer or a publisher? I never get it right. You notice in the middle of the show, I've introduced you three different ways? Have you noticed that?
I have not.
Why do you never correct me? It's not live. I can edit it.
And I kind of feel like I don't want to put any pressure on you because, I don't really care. It's all good. You can call me whatever. I'm a lawyer and I'm a columnist, so I write a bunch of op-eds and I purposely am in there to kind of.
We'll go back and edit all this in.
Okay.
Later on.
All right. Perfect. Thank you. So you speak millennial. You are actually paid to speak millennial.
I am actually paid to do this.
Look at that, Jay.
It's
great.
Cool. Because I'll just tell you a little quick background.
Wait, Jay, I have to show you the picture.
Oh, wait. Oh. All right. So, Elora, you've shared the picture with me, now Jessica, now we're showing Jay.
So this she is looks super hot in it.
That's the first thing you notice?
No, I noticed the F word because I'm a child.
It's okay.
I feel weird saying it.
I do too.
I don't know why.
It's so liberating.
Well, go ahead. Help us start us off. The picture, and I think, I don't know if I can post that to the site. Can we blur it a little bit? Is there a way to do that?
I'm sure we could figure out a way to do it. I could Photoshop my head in there.
Why don't we Photoshop something and just put a little asterisk over the U? Can we do that? Is that appropriate?
There you go.
Yeah. So you're giving a speech. You're the keynote speaker, and the F word is behind you so the entire audience can see it.
Yes. And the audience that day was college administrators and Title IX advisors. So they're college faculty members who are working in the space of reducing sexual assault on college campuses.
So you point to the word, you're like, less of this.
Yeah. Not necessarily, actually. So one of the things that I spend a lot of time doing is going to college campuses, particularly to fraternities and to team locker rooms and that kind of thing, and talking to college boys about risky behavior, about particularly things like sexual assault, hazing, drinking, drugs, that kind of thing.
I think this is good. I think you should start at a younger age almost.
Well, I mean, right. I do work with
high school. It's too late by the time they're in the fraternity.
Yeah.
It is. But here's the thing. And because I work occasionally with middle schoolers, I work a lot with high schoolers, but truthfully, the college boys, although it is late for some education, it's perfect for what I do because I need to be able to speak to these people as adults. Mm. And I go in there and I say, look, here's how you're going to get fucked without getting fucked. Okay?
She broke the ice now.
No, it's good.
She broke the ice.
I feel like we are definitely underneath the water at this point, and that's great.
We're at, 337? So that wasn't bad. That was a decent length of time before we got the explicit rating.
Yeah, yeah.
So you go directly to the boys, and what's the message to them? Because this is very intriguing.
The message to them is, you need to protect yourself. Now, I realize that this is a very one-sided message, but I'm a lawyer. So I go in there, and I have this persona of being like a fixer, like a Winston Wolfe type. And I go in and I say, look.
Love Winston Wolfe.
Yeah, and the thing is, this is what works, because particularly young men are so used to everyone telling them that they are the problem and they're doing everything wrong. It doesn't work. No one's ears are on when that's how they're made to feel.
Sure.
So I go and I say, look, I'm on your side, but my message is, look, you will protect yourself by espousing good behavior. You will protect yourself by being vocal about what kind of behavior is appropriate, and you will do good for others by protecting yourself. So it becomes this kind of nice circle of being selfish, but then in that selfishness, protecting others.
I love this. This is exactly.
See, now I do too.
It's, you know what it is? It's living in the real world, which is what I've been annoyed with the I want to say identity politics of the left, where they'll say, you know, the white males are the problem and they have privilege and they're awful and they go onto a screed and I go, well, that, yes, okay, I agree with all that. As a white male, I'll say I am the problem. I suck. But you don't win anybody to your argument exactly by right saying that. You
know, see, now, I don't agree with that, but I still come down on the same side thinking this is a positive, proactive message. You know what? It's real.
Well, I mean,
there's no talking points. I expected a lot of liberal jargon on this. I got to be honest, Laura.
No, I have a lot of liberal beliefs, but I really hate liberal jargon.
Right, you're not. This is not talking points. The kids will have their lives ruined when they make a mistake at 18 or 19, and you can't undo it.
Yeah, I think of Brock Turner, who is now. I don't know. I'm sure you know this. That he is now in the literal textbook definition of rape.
Yeah.
In the criminology textbooks, his picture is next to rape, and you know, I know his dad got a lot of flack by saying it was a 20-minute. 20 minutes of his life that defines the rest of his life.
It was 20 minutes of action.
Yeah, and that's a really, it's a really dumb way of putting it.
By the way, before his dad went on Facebook asking for everybody to donate money for his poor son's legal defense.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bad move all around.
Yeah.
But what you're doing is basically saying to the boys out there, like, hey, this is true. You are young and dumb and stupid, and if you make a mistake, it could literally taint you for the next 50 years.
But I also hear, Laura, that it's like the kids that don't even make a mistake but get up to that border, they're at the wrong place, and they don't realize how dangerous the world is.
That's exactly right.
You and I have talked about this on Chasing News, that like this lack of coping skills and understanding adversity and that the world is harsh, it's like they come out into the world and they're a college kid and they're a complete dummy.
Well, and here's the other thing, right? Like, when you talk about, like, a Brock Turner type, I'm not going to save somebody who's a violent rapist. I'm not. Like, if you're a violent criminal, that's who you're going to be. But, I mean, and I have nothing to say to those people. But who I have something to say to is Brock Turner's friends, you know, the other guys that are around there. That,
right.
Like, maybe, you know, see something not so right going on, but they really don't know what to do and they really don't know what to say. They don't have enough life experience to be able to process the risk that it creates for them, you know, and, you know, they need to understand, like, oh, shit, like, something's going to happen, and then I'm going to get screwed. So I better do something to insulate myself.
Right.
And I'll tell you that this is something that millennials are in a unique position to really understand and process in the way that no generation before them can. Millennials understand the idea of a public image versus a private image. They get it. You know, people older, like, you know,
do they though, Laura? I mean, I see what these kids are putting on Snapchat and
well, they're still
Instagram.
Doing stupid shit.
I mean,
just all blended together. Now you know that everyone's researched you online already, and they know all about you.
Right. I think
they get it. Like, if you say to these people, you need to create a PR campaign for yourself, so that if something goes down in your fraternity house and you weren't at ground zero of that wrongdoing, a prosecutor is going to Google you. What are they going to find?
That's a good point.
That's a great point. How about that?
And here's the thing. Like, and I know that, you know, sometimes I present it to them in a way that sounds almost secret, you know. But the truth is it's not, because a young boy, a young man who's out there, who is publicly making good statements about safety and responsibility, is going to affect his community, whether he means it or not. It's going to have a positive impact. I mean, I hope he means it, but even if he doesn't, it'll help.
Yeah, no, I agree 100% with this. And I like that you're framing it in a way that the narcissism of youth can understand, which is, you know, I don't know if I want to make the world a better place, but I do know I don't want to go to jail. So let me figure out how to make that happen. And I think that is sort of, that lives in the real politique of the actual world instead of the more haughty ideas of the left coming in and going like, let's fix it by proving that you're an asshole. And you go like, I don't know if that fixes it.
With the labels, and this is that's the problem. The generalizations. Everyone is generalized.
And nobody wants to be characterized as a bad guy.
No, well, think about it. And you know, you especially when you put that label of a white male, like all of a sudden, how did that become the bad guy? How many different, think of the differences in all the different white men that are out there.
Right.
Right. I mean, there's white men that are good, there's white men that are bad. There's black men that are good, there's black. I mean, it's like crazy to make that generalization.
So do you get people, so do they react? And is there a certain age, like, do you feel like, oh, man, I'm too late for some of them, but some I'm gonna get through to them, that you got to kind of navigate the waters of your life? Like, it's almost like my perception of a lot of millennials, on the younger end, I think, is that they don't understand that life has consequences and decisions have consequences.
Well, here's the thing. I think that in a lot of respects that's a defense mechanism to act like you don't know that there's any risks. When in fact, my own experience working with college age boys has been that they're afraid of everything, but they know that they can't show it. And they can't admit to being afraid. They can't admit to perceiving risk because it would make them look, I don't know, weak, unmanly, like you name it, fill in the blank. Which is why I think my approach works with them, because I go in and I'm like, look, I'm not going to judge you. I'm going to tell you you're screwed. And then I'm going to tell you how I'm going to fix it, or I'm going to help you fix it, or I'm going to help you avoid it. And it just changes that dynamic. I'm not waiting for them to perceive the risk. We're already past that.
I think the best way to go about it. You know, I do think that you're right, that there is a culture of masculinity that won't admit that there's an issue. And by going in and making them accept it in a way that doesn't upend their beliefs about their own masculinity, you fix it for them without condemning them.
Well, that's important. Acting stupid is not a part of masculine behavior. That's the problem. It's part of behavior and immaturity.
Yeah, I don't know. I did some pretty stupid stuff, even as a nerd.
Did.
That, you know, I like girls' stupid stuff.
Laura, he juggles.
Yeah.
There's a video.
You know, girls' stupid stuff is like, oh, let's play truth or dare at our sleepover.
Stuff is like getting in a car with a guy that she doesn't know. That's what girls' stupid stuff.
Right. And
guy's stupid stuff hurts girls. Like, it's all great.
Yeah. Guy stupid is like, I think I can beat that camel in a fist fight. So I'm going to go punch it and see what happens.
I think we need more of that, truthfully. I think there should be more fist more fights with camels.
More Darwinism.
Yes. Yeah. A little more. Just a little more.
Hey, what happened to Joey? Oh, he got mauled to death by a camel.
That camel kicked his ass. Oh, my God. Really did.
Oh, he's a big Spadia fan, is he?
Here we go. So that context of this picture, which I don't know if we can even put up.
I want to say a little about the context. So what I was saying at that point in my speech is, when I go in, I don't have a long time to bond with these guys. I don't know I don't know them. They don't know me. They have no idea what I'm about. So I have like 5 minutes to create a bond with them where they're going to now listen for the next hour that I have them, for that kind of short attention span. And the quickest way to do it is to throw some good profanity in within the first 5 minutes. And the reason why it works is because it's unprofessional. Because it lets them know that I'm willing to risk my own professional reputation.
So you blow it up from go.
Yeah. And then they're like, oh, wait, maybe she's not who we think she was going to be.
Well, I think this is deep-seated psychology. This is something I'm a big... Listen, when I say I'm a big Tony Robbins fan, I have been very dubious of Tony Robbins, but I saw his documentary on Netflix, I Am Not Your Guru, which, if you haven't seen it, absolutely see it. It's fantastic.
You just wanted to walk on coals.
Yeah.
That was really the whole thing.
I just wanted to look like I have gigantism without actually having gigantism.
He does. He's got the biggest mouth.
Everything is gigantic.
Right? But he doesn't have, like, it all works. Right? He can speak. He doesn't have it. There's no issue.
He's like a good Frankenstein. He's like Frankenstein Rev 2. Like, after Frankenstein worked out all the kinks, he built Tony Robbins. But
how tall is Tony Robbins? He's pretty tall.
He's 9.5 feet tall. A lot of people don't know this. He's circus freak tall. But no, he has a whole thing about he curses a blue streak in his live show because it's psychologically proven that the more you curse, the more people will remember what you said. It makes a bigger impact.
It's because it makes them listen because they don't know what's coming next.
Yes.
So, but in comedy, though, you've taught me well.
Yes.
That the cursing is a little bit of a crutch. So I don't curse in my set.
I say that.
Maybe not.
I say that.
No, I don't think so.
You don't curse.
I don't think I curse at all.
Maybe at one point, no. I'm now, thinking of the dog joke.
No, the dog joke, but I retired all the jokes.
Yeah, I say that comedy, like cursing in comedy, is like using a bazooka, which is, you know, it's used, but they don't let privates fire one. So just wait till you're better before.
Can I tell you?
Jeez,
what
am I still a private? Damn it!
The slide that came after my fuck slide was a picture of nutmeg, because what I say is you use profanity like nutmeg,
mm-hmm.
just like enough nutmeg to be a secret ingredient, but not so much that it makes it bitter.
That's wonderful.
I like to take the nutmeg on a microplane.
It's getting into nutmeg season.
I'm thinking about nutmeg right now.
Like a real ball of nutmeg, because that's like
right, like a little nutmeg
right.
over a frothy drink.
Pumpkin spice latte time.
I'm thinking about something that was just said. Fuck slide, which sounds
I tried to move past it, Alora.
It sounds like a move that I'd be bad at. Gonna try this fuck slide. How'd that work out for you? Not very well.
And we've got the title for the podcast.
Totally Freudian, as I just literally left the hospital for pre-op testing because I'm getting shoulder surgery for my drunken slip and slide antics.
Oh, yeah. How are you doing? Are you okay?
It's all great. Talk to me after Thursday.
Walk us through the slip and slide, how this happened.
Well, I may or may not have been playing Flip Cup Slip and Slide at an adult-only pool club party.
Sounds like a good time.
Yeah, it was a good time. I'm kind of a fun. And I was trying to be a little bit cautious, and, you know, I just didn't throw myself headlong onto the slip and slide, and in the hesitation, I landed badly on my shoulder.
Oh.
Which is incredibly annoying because I'm a flutist, and that's the arm that I need.
You're a flutist, too.
I'm going to tell you something.
There's so much I don't know about you.
Say that next time I'm on the air.
Oh, don't worry.
If I had a nickel for every flautist who couldn't play because of a slip and slide injury, my God, you want to talk about textbook down the middle.
That's why we call it the fuck slide.
That's the name.
I don't want to call you a stereotype, but my God.
God, the title could be so many things.
I would say
the F slide is tough.
I would say flautist.
Flautist, is that what we say?
Flautist plays the F slide.
Is that officially how you say it?
No, you know, so there is much debate over this.
Is it a flautist or a flutist?
No, you know, so it used to be flautist many years ago, but really that's kind of pretentious.
That's what I am.
See, I think so too, Laura.
And I'll tell you, I don't even go with flutist because I'm a piccolo specialist, so I go with piccolo chick.
Piccolo chick.
It was my favorite Happy Days character, Jenny Piccolo. Right.
Jenny Piccolo.
You remember her?
Piccolo chick.
That sounds like a superhero, right?
I can't even play the recorder.
Yeah.
What? Do you know they stuffed my recorder with cotton during the fifth grade Christmas play?
But Bill, if I had a voice like yours, I need to play the flute.
Wow, thank you.
Do
you know how embarrassing that is, though?
I can't even whistle.
Really?
I find that
we should teach Jessica.
I don't know how to whistle. I can't whistle either.
Really?
Laura, you can whistle, right?
I can whistle. Who can't whistle?
Jessica and Jay, apparently.
I've been trying nonstop all weekend. That was my thing.
Like, that goes...
No. I can't whistle.
Wait. All right, hold on, Jessica. Do that again. Try that again.
No,
wait.
I can't do it.
You're going shh. Yeah. You're like saying shh.
I might be sucking in. I don't know.
No, you can't. Wait. You can't whistle either.
I can't whistle.
Next time on Chasing News, I'll give everybody whistling lessons.
Well, actually, I think you got to come back to the podcast and be here in person.
Yeah,
that'd be ideal.
And we'll teach these guys how to whistle.
Because I'll tell you what, this is part of my lawsuit for emotional damage against Snow White.
Oh no!
Every time Whistle While You Work comes on, I go, you know what? I can't. Dwarves, stop mocking me.
You know who else is not here today in the studio? Christy.
Oh, and Laura, you missed this. So this will drop next week.
Right.
Today's what, the 25th?
Today's the 25th, so it will drop
October 3rd?
October 4th.
October 4th.
That's right.
All right, so it's October 4th now when you're listening to this. A week ago,
Monday.
In 2 days.
Yeah.
Right?
9 days ago.
What? Why
do you always get into explaining the details of the date?
Don't know.
It drives you crazy.
You got to be very specific. Nobody gives a shit.
There's a little time warp.
It's for people who are playing fantasy podcasts. They just got 3 points. Every time Bill tries to figure out what date the podcast drops, it's 3 points.
Now I forgot where I was going with this whole
story. Christy.
Christy. Governor Christy?
Oh, he's not here. So he was supposed to be here. For Ask the Governor. And, I think what happened was the Cowboys are on tonight.
I heard different. I heard that someone was throwing out a garbage bag full of used pork and that he got wind of it and he was going to go eat up the pork.
You know, you make a lot of Christy fat jokes.
I do. It's my favorite thing to do.
I fat jokes. I feel there's so much else to make fun of him about.
I agree. And what's funny is I don't know that they work. So Jay, he's been chasing the whole, he's looking for the perfect Christy fat joke.
That's
what it is. Because they're all different.
Here's my deal with that. Every time we get into politics, it becomes a thing. So I can't get into politics, but I can get into Christie's gigantic fat pants. And when I make that joke, it doesn't go anywhere bad. It doesn't go negative.
I think you should stop saying get in his pants. Like, that's just...
Yeah, that's a little disturbing.
No, it's just my... That's actually my plan to help the people of Puerto Rico send old pairs of Christie's pants down for shelter.
Wait, so he toured the country running for president, and he walked for president. Come back here for... Because of the games going on.
That's what
too
we think.
Busy.
I don't know.
That's
they, you know what they said? They told Eric Scott, they said it was a conflict. He had a conflict.
First off,
like
he didn't
like the day before.
First off, he didn't run for president. He ambled for president, number one. Number two.
See, Laura, it like it's catchy eventually.
I do like that.
And number two, let's be clear. He's had senioritis for about 18 months.
Oh,
right?
Easy.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, he lost the nomination, and he just said, you know, I'm gonna ride out the rest of my time.
See, I think he knows about the air conditioning.
Oh, my God.
So, Laura, the air conditioning is broken.
Yeah, I know about the air conditioning. You've been bitching about that air conditioning.
I have been. One of our, I'm not going to name names, of course.
But it is so hot in here.
It's so hot. And one of the sponsors was mad.
It's probably good Laura's not here, because it would just be over the top hot.
You can't do hot?
I can't be hot.
No.
I can't sweat. I can't.
Yeah. It's hot. I'm glistening. I think right now.
I'm gonna need somebody to fan me with like a big like banana leaf or something if it's gonna be hot in the studio.
Banana. That's very descriptive. I would never go there.
No, that's
do
a banana.
Have bananas
leaf.
Around.
Right. Like what's
that's a fantasy she has worked out.
I was gonna say.
That worked out.
Yeah.
What are you wearing during the whole banana leaf fanning episode?
When we find her literotica name, we're going to be able to say like, oh, there's a lot of banana leaf stuff here.
Oh, wow.
It's like 80,000 words.
Laura loves bananas. It's so bizarre.
You would never have guessed.
No, there's so much I don't know.
There's a lot. I'm like an onion.
Peeling back.
Every time you peel back another layer.
I'm like an onion, too.
I got it. I felt like Jay Stahl, but you were thinking of a joke.
No, I'm like an onion, too. I'm foul tasting and will make you cry. No layers. Just a bitter, disgusting flavor.
There are layers, Jay. There are layers.
There, oh, yeah. Layers.
Each layer is exactly the same and awful.
Yeah, we have to bring her in next time.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, but we got to get the air conditioning
The air's
got
to be fixed. It's... Yeah, it's Vic was being positive. Vic DiPietro was in.
Well, he's in the phase of his life where
a week ago.
Yeah, he was.
Oh, he's so good, Vic DiPietro. I like him.
Vic is great.
Yeah,
bread and milk guy.
I love him. He's great.
He's in a phase of his life where he wants to be warm, though. You know, he's like that age that starts looking at Florida, going, might be a good idea to live there.
They're wearing a sweater.
Yeah. It's
oh,
like
it's
that
a crazy age. That's
Jay went through a sweater phase, though. Jay went through a whole sweater phase.
I went through a fat phase that I thought I could hide by sweating underneath a sweater.
Yeah.
And as I found out, you can't.
This is like the hottest it's ever been here.
That's the same age where you stop paying attention to what kind of shoes you wear.
Oh,
and you only buy them for comfort.
Yep.
That's like the same age.
I don't know. I'm almost there.
What do you wear?
Look at these.
Well, you don't have flip-flops on today.
Oh, do you know why? Do you know what happened?
It was...
Finally broke.
Oh, you popped a flop.
You called it. Pop the flop.
Pop the flop.
It happened. I was so mad. It happened Sunday night, and I walked right out of them. Had these flip-flops for so long, they're like toe grooves.
Yeah.
My toes have made an impression. I've had them for years.
The impression that your toes have made is of an Achilles tendon snapping. That's why men should not wear flip-flops. We have Achilles tendons that snap, Bill.
To be fair, I don't think that men should wear any open-toed shoes. I'm not even sure men should have feet. They should just have, like, hooves.
I agree with you 100%.
Because they can't be trusted with them. That's the
hooves
thing.
And a banana leaf. There's a whole story here.
Bill, let me ask you a question.
Building.
Do you have hair on your toes?
You're not asking me that question.
No, I'm asking
No.
Oh, God.
Very little.
I have like, on my big toe, I have a little tuft of hair.
Really? See, I don't.
And every time I look at it, I go, I should not be alive. Every time I look at it, I go, like, I'm an evolutionary quirk. Like, I reproduce
Laura,
three
this is
times.
Why he's in therapy. And on Wellbutrin.
Wouldn't you be happier if you had hooves? They'd be more functional and better to look at.
Do you think hooves, they probably don't smell.
No, they don't.
Right? Like, because you're not covering them in a shoe all day. That's my big issue.
I think that there's a banana leaf slash, what are the, are they called satyrs? What are the horse people? Like, I think that if we...
A centaur?
The centaur.
It's a centaur.
It's a centaur.
The centaur is fanning her with the banana leaf.
And I think we found that we've cracked that nut.
I think we have. There's probably a website for that, I'm sure.
I'm sure that there's a website none of us want to look at.
Definitely
not.
It gets you on a list, actually.
It's fuckslide.com.
I thought Allura would fit right in with this group.
I think so, yeah. 100%. I like that there's someone saying the F word more than me.
I'm sorry. Was I not? Was that too much?
No.
Are you kidding?
It was more like butter.
Wait, butter?
How did butter? She uses the word like butter.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Thank you. I need. Sorry. Yeah. No, I got it. That's okay.
I don't think it's bad. Thing on everything.
And there's Paula Deen.
Oh, very nice.
I picked up on it, right?
Wow, nothing gets by you, Jay.
I knew it was Paula Deen. She didn't even have to say the N-word for me to figure it out.
Paula Deen thing, she's onto something with the whole feet thing. Dennis made fun of me today. I had my hat on backwards. Dennis Malloy.
For having your hat on backwards?
Yeah, he yelled at me. He's like, what are you, 17?
I
think it's appropriate to wear a hat backward.
You were really dressing down at the radio station.
I know, flip flops and a backwards
like
hat.
A flannel too, and like
I was not wearing a flannel.
Flannel and sweatpants.
No, he
backwards hat on.
He has a third job panhandling right after the radio station, so he likes to dress for it. But no, the only thing you can't do is put it on sideways. Sideways is ridiculous. Backwards is fine.
Sideways is not even a choice. But backwards is kind of like it tells a whole story. Like, you only have three playlists, and it's like Pearl Jam, Green Day, Soundgarden.
No, to me, it means that you're a professional arm wrestler, and you've just turned the switch on, and you're ready to go over the top.
Oh.
Thank you. Sylvester Stallone's Over the Top, 1987, Canon Films. You're welcome. I need a
list of things that I'm supposed to read, because I feel like I just
cannot
keep up.
Oh, the list is so long. I think Jessica should read The Godfather. Laura, you know The Godfather, right?
I don't know. I thought that was kind of...
Staten Island, it's like required...
Did you read it or just watch the movie?
You know, I think I listened to part of it on audio. I don't think I listened to the whole thing, but my husband read it, and I have to hear about what it says all the time. So I feel like I've read it.
Does your husband quote it often?
Yes, he does quote it often.
I quote it all the time. Jessica, you've got
to
see it.
Go to the mattresses. That's a good... You have to say go to the mattresses. Yeah,
I think you've got to...
It was Barzini.
I did watch it once when I met Paul Sorvino. I had to like...
You only watched it once?
Watched it.
No, you watched Goodfellas.
Oh, well, so there you go. So I haven't even watched it.
See, now, so Jessica just confused The Godfather with Goodfellas. I'm a Goodfellas fan, though.
No, Goodfellas is fine, but The Godfather is a brilliant movie. Goodfellas is a good movie. It's totally different.
Yeah, I would say great movie.
I think Goodfellas is great.
But not all-time classic. Not like The Godfather. Godfather will be studied in 100 years.
When Joe Pesci gets the kitchen knife from his mother, he's like, Ma, I hit a deer. He's stuck in the thing.
It was fantastic.
Did he really hit a deer?
No, they had a body in the back.
Right.
And they had to go get the knife. And
my favorite part was when he comes home and... The mother-in-law is screaming at him.
Right.
And he just looks, goes back in the car.
Yeah, fantastic.
There were so many great moments.
There are. Those
so wait, you've all... seen this. You've seen Goodfellas.
But she hasn't seen The Godfather?
No.
I have to watch The Godfather.
I'm thinking Jessica's not seen the whole Goodfellas.
The thing about The Godfather, though, it's one of those movies. First of all, it's timeless. Second of all, it is one of the really few things in life that is worth the hype.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, it is the real deal, and it's not because people think that mafia guys are cool. It is a brilliant story.
It's a 2-hour and 45-minute movie that earns it. It's not like one of those 2:45s. Is it on Netflix?
That's
should
a good
be.
Question.
It should be legally required.
Can we look that up?
It can't be on Netflix.
Do you know what's great?
Why can't it be on
and
Netflix?
And I recorded it and then changed cable providers, and I lost it. The Godfather Epic.
Yeah, oh, where they cut it in order.
They cut it in order.
It's the best part ever.
See,
that's funny.
I dislike that, Bill, only because I think the cutting back and forth in Godfather 2 provides a counterpoint for what's going on with Al Pacino or, you know, with Michael and Vito.
But that cutting back and forth for a novice is very difficult, because if you ever watch somebody watch Godfather 2 the first time, they're like, who's that? Who's Frankie Pantani?
It's a good point.
What are they doing in Cuba? What's going on?
Why are they in Cuba? It's Godfather 3, though.
No,
it never happened. I never saw that.
Never happened, right?
That's he who shall not be named. No.
I can't unsee it, though.
There's some.
You can't unsee that.
The best part of Godfather 3 is the one everybody quotes. They keep pulling me back in.
I quoted that today, I think.
Yeah.
I quoted that with Vic DiBattista.
Yeah, that's. I would say that Godfather 2, though, the first off, Hyman Roth, this is the business we have chosen, Michael. That is a quote that I've used a million times in my life. Because at any time I get mad at something that happened in the comedy industry, I turn to my comedy friends and go, this is the business we have chosen, Michael. And they punch me in the throat as they should. But also the counterpoint between Vito, who includes everybody and builds a family,
right,
versus Michael, who pushes everyone away, giving Fredo the kiss of death in Cuba.
Yeah. How about that?
I mean, my goodness. I knew it was you, Fredo. You broke my heart. Mwah. I say that all the time when I kill somebody.
You know, someone actually took my face in their hands at my wedding and said, I knew it wasn't you. You broke my heart because I was an hour late to my own wedding ceremony, and it was not my fault.
And you were going down a fuck slide. You were How could you be blamed? You showed up with a broken shoulder.
It was not my fault, and I was so guilt-ridden through the entire line, like the receiving line. I just apologized to everybody the whole time because I'd gotten stuck in traffic. It was like this whole thing. And I couldn't get past it until someone took my face in their hands and said, I know it wasn't you.
So wait, your wedding was delayed an hour?
Yeah, it was not good. And I walked down the aisle, and the priest, when I got to the end of the aisle...
Was he pissed at you?
Oh, he was pissed.
Of course he was.
He said, you're pushing it.
So get out. I love it. I like that. I like a tough priest. That's good.
It was not good.
Yeah. How did your husband react? He didn't care. He was probably late, too.
He was absolutely throwing up. Like, he thought I wasn't coming. Kathy. And it was in the days before everyone had cell phones all the time.
You know how to make an entrance. That's what you do.
That's fun. So I didn't even think of that, right? That's so old school.
Right.
That he thought you may not be showing up.
Can you imagine?
Oh, that must have been brutal. Think about that with before cell phones.
That would have sucked.
Right?
Yeah, no, so, it was bad.
You wonder if he said anything in that hour that he regretted and never told you.
You know, no, I feel like
I want to ask him that. I feel like your husband should come on.
Yeah, we should probably have.
Come on.
What do you think? I want to talk to him about that hour. Like, at what point was it, oh my God, I'm so worried about her, so worried, I hate her. Like, did it turn? Was there a turning point?
It was probably 1 minute before she walked in.
Right.
After like 40 minutes, he started, like in the beginning it was fine, but then after like 40 minutes, he started to be like, oh, wait a minute.
But like this fear of you getting into trouble or getting an accident turned to anger of, oh my God, she's leaving me at the altar.
You know, I don't think he ever even considered that I might have been in an accident or anything. I think he went straight from, oh, she's probably just fixing her hair to like, she's not coming.
Well, I guess that's better than the alternative, relief. Like if he's blowing out a big like, whoo, thank God, this doesn't have to happen. That's what you don't want to hear.
Yeah. Right, like he starts hitting on one of the bridesmaids or something. Like hey, what happens, right?
You know, I've always liked you.
Right. Obviously, this wasn't meant to be.
That would be great.
Wow. Yeah, I think we should have him in.
Yeah, for sure.
He's a party.
All righty, Laura. Hey, thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much, you guys. This was great.
You were fantastic. I'm saying it right, Elora?
Yes.
Elora, spelled E-L-U-R-A.
Yes, you'll remember it this way. It was going to be Elvira because it was the 70s and my parents were high. And the V-I was written incoherently, so they just thought this was better, and that's what they went with.
Elora, and what's the last name?
Nanos.
Elora Nanos, which sounds like a made-up name from my science fiction that I'm writing.
Vic DiPotato, actually, we discussed it because you were calling in at the end of the last podcast.
Oh, okay.
So the timing is going to be very weird on this. He's like, that sounds like someone on Star Trek.
Yes, because there's Uhura on Star Trek, right? Yes,
that's it.
All the time.
That's it.
I'm just waiting for them to name a car after me. They got Alero, Elantra, Aurora.
Elora.
Yeah, I'll call Hyundai. I'll make that happen.
Yeah.
I'll buy it no matter what it looks like.
Jay knows people. He juggles.
Yeah.
All right, Elora.
All right, guys.
Great to talk to you. We'll see you later.
I'll see you on Thursday.
Thursday. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
How about that? Elora Nanos.
She was fantastic.
She was great. All right. Speaking Millennial, I'm Bill Spadia. You'll hear from our sponsors in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Jessica Nutt, Jay Black.
Jay Black.
Until next time.
At neuroethicalrevolution.com.
Oh, my God. That can't be the title. I'm happy to talk about one of our sponsors. Great sponsor, good friend, Vinny Brand, owns the Stress Factory in New Brunswick. The website is stressfactory.com. Vinny Brand runs one of the great comedy clubs, honestly, in the country. Not only does he have A-list comics coming in almost every single week, but the show is great. The food is fantastic. The staff, the service, there's parking right next door. If you've not discovered the Stress Factory in New Brunswick, you've got to get there. Go to stressfactory.com and buy your tickets. It's a great night out, reasonable cost. Absolutely hilarious entertainment, great food, and hospitality. StressFactory.com.
I'm getting pointed at by Bill Spadia, so I'm confused here. Steve Califerth, he's the guy who owns Flemington Car and Truck, and he also owns the Somerset Patriots, where you could see Bill Spadia throw out a first pitch, ceremonial first pitch. This is a place, if you are looking for a car or a truck of any sort, you'd be a dummy not to go to Flemington Car and Truck. And you want to know how big a deal this guy is? His website is just Flemington.com. That the entire state of New Jersey.
That's a big deal.
That's a huge deal. Flemington.com is where you want to go to check out all the great prices on Jeeps, on Cadillacs. I think that the only two thoughts I had were Jeep and Cadillac.
But there's so many different cars.
There's Audi, there's Buicks, there's GMC, BMWs, there's Fords. This is the car, when you're driving along and you see Bill Spadia driving in a red Jeep and you go, oh, is Bill going through a midlife crisis? You know where he got that midlife crisis car at? Flemington Car and Truck. That's where he got it. So go check that out, Flemington.com. And if you're in the Flemington area, you got to go check out Flemington Car and Truck because Steve Califer, friend of the podcast, friend to humanity, friend to the person buying a car, Flemington Car and Truck.
I do just want to add a congratulations to the Somerset Patriots for making it all the way to the league, not to the championship, but they got to the playoffs.
Nice.
And I threw out a couple first pitches. It's going to be a great season next year.
How'd it go?
I was going to avoid that. Let's put it this way. Sparky Lyle, the Yankee great, who was the first relief pitcher to win a Cy Young, he said, well, look at the bright side. If it was 0-2, I would have told you to throw it that low because he would have swung at it. So I got a swinging third strike. It was my worst first pitch that I have ever thrown.
If Gary Delabate's a 0 and George Bush after 9/11 is a 10, you are...
That particular pitch was a 5.
That's not too bad.
Well, it got over the plate, but I hit the dirt. I don't think I've ever hit the dirt.
I can guarantee you I would have hit someone off the first base line if I was throwing the opening pitch.
It was bad. But the Somerset Patriots are great. The TD Bank Ballpark, great.
And we just gave Steve Califer a 9-minute plug. So there you go, Steve.
We love Steve.
Thanks for being our sponsor, guy. Thank you.